It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Yeah, this movie didn't care about ratings. It didn't give a fuck. It wanted to give you nastiness, and it delivered. And that's what I like about this movie. Right.
The dummy, the phone call, yes, he was in his room. Yes. It wasn't him breathing. I just can't.
It's some crazy nut that comes out of the movies and calls you. It's just a coincidence.
No, it is.
I don't really care about her. There's nothing about her that really is redeeming. She wakes up, she's in bed. Oops. She leaves after they're gone and goes and screws Bandana Bob.
There's nobody in the house, is there? Take a look at that.
A man figure. What's going on?
Nobody there now. Let's go take a look.
But that's what the pills did. They let him teleport. You didn't get that?
No.
His father, the woman he was with, they were both killed. It even talks about an ex. It is the same person. It is George Tatum.
Because there were quite a few homages in this. Changeling being one.
The ball.
Shining being another.
Yeah.
Psycho being another when you see her step into the shower. Well,
leave this house. No. Why you can.
So I bought the VHS, brought it to his table, and I gave it to him. I'm like, would you sign this, please? And he almost tossed it back at me, and he's like, I want nothing to do with that.
Nanny, nanny, boo, boo, stick your head in doo-doo.
I feel like I need to take a shower.
Yes, and that's what a nasty will do.
Yeah.
That's what a nasty will do.
It's only a dream, and dreams can't hurt you.
You couldn't do it. Like, after a couple of years, this was you were not making these kind of films because nobody would see them. They'd be banned.
Now, if you value your job, you will get him back in this hospital before things get out of hand.
Sorry, you're sorry.
Oh, I know.
You're sorry.
CJ, what are you doing out of bed? Getting sick and tired of your silly games.
Somebody was actually indicted. He served time because of this film.
Wow.
Not very many movies have that notoriety, but this one does.
Yeah, Kathy, wake up! Somebody's trying to kill Kathy!
Oh.
Yeah, it only gets worse from here, fuckers. Greetings to all our Horror 101 listeners coming back for episode 78. Feel like getting a little nasty? Like sleazy, sticky nasty? Because that's where this train is heading this time around. For the first time since our Maniac Double Bill, we're going back to one of those notorious video nasty films of the 70s and early 80s. Remember the nasties? There was a list of about 80 films in total that the Brits banned outright. Like gone, see ya, off the shelves, do not rent or sell, and if you were caught distributing them, it meant jail time thanks to the relentless crusades of social conservative moral do-gooders like that twat Mary Whitehouse and her merry gang of arrogant farts.
You know, people who say, but why shouldn't adults be able to see this kind of thing in their own home? I'm half tempted to say that people who make that kind of demand, knowing that children are likely to see it, aren't really themselves very mature and adult.
Fuck you.
Fortunately, those days are long gone. The nasties have been regularly available on DVD and Blu-ray for years now. And for this show, we're going to cover one of the more notorious films from that list of once-banned films. Not because it's the hardest, or strongest, or most depraved. There are many more titles out there which are far more disturbing than this one. But because of a few notable episodes in its history, including one of the biggest effects scandals in the genre, it's gained a cult of intrigue from us old-school hardcore horror fans. Its guerrilla filmmaking, from a small, inexperienced crew, it represented the genesis of a certain makeup artist's career. At the height of its VCR exile, copies of the movie ran for over $100 a pop.
Dollars or pounds?
Pounds, pet. This is the big one.
Despite all its flaws, this film dumps buckets of blood and sleaze on you, and for all these reasons, the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, the lovely nude myself, will be given the Horror 101 treatment to Romano Scavolini's Nightmare. Okay, so here we are. What is it, 16th?
All day.
16th all day. Welcome back. Welcome back, everyone, except, of course, Paul B. Can't make it. Well, it's like China all over again. We're going to see him once in a blue moon now, right? Because he's working afternoons, and unfortunately...
Well, until you guys get a free weekend, you partiers.
The man is nefarious.
So I'd warned everybody that I was going to drag them through the mud. Last one we did was Dolls, right? Whimsical, fun, about as light as a horror film as you can get. Now we're going back to the sleaze days. Early 80s, nasty film. I've only seen this a couple of times. Granted, it's a slasher in the same vein as Maniac, and I think Lustig's Maniac had a big influence on this film. I could not find this film in Essex County for years. I'd always heard about it. The first time I ever got a glimpse of this film, there was a movie that was kind of like Terror in the Isles. Remember Terror in the Isles that gave you all the clips of horror movies?
Right.
There was another one from like 85, 86 and was called Terror on Tape. So it had clips of all these movies that, like Vampire Hookers and Return of the Deadly Spawn, Kathy's Curse, which is Canadian. Nobody's ever fucking heard of that movie. I watched this Terror on Tape. And it had all these clips, and this is the first... That's when I figured out that this movie existed. And it showed that clip of him coming up the stairs. Right. I'm like, I need to find this film. I have to find it. And I think that early 90s I found it. But I think this one is important, only because it is fucking nasty. And not a lot of people know about this film.
Yeah.
This film's very obscure. There was a UK distributor, a VHS distributor, that did serve time. He was arrested for failing to cut out a certain section of this film before selling it. He didn't do it, and they caught him. He had this uncut version of this film, which you're going to see.
Oh, yeah.
And they put him away for a bit. Somebody was actually indicted. He served time because of this film.
Wow.
Not very many movies have that notoriety, but this one does.
You've been giving it, talking about it as the title, Nightmare in a Damaged Brain.
Nightmares in a Damaged Brain, yes.
But I can only ever find the title Nightmare.
Yes, and I think Nightmares in a Damaged Brain was more of the UK, European. I think over in America they called it just Nightmare.
Because even IMDb doesn't have the alternate title listed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is odd.
Just Nightmare?
Just Nightmare.
It's definitely also known as Nightmare in a Nightmares, plural, in a Damaged Brain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I haven't even asked, has anybody seen this film? Did you and I watch this at any point? No? Because it's been that long since I've seen it.
No.
Yeah?
No, I've never seen it.
I just, like, there is some nastiness to it, but I'll warn you right now that, like, the middle of the film, there's a lot of padding. Like I said, it's about 100 minutes, so, but for me, the ending kind of, it pays it off fairly well.
Right.
The ending pays it off fairly well.
It's funny to hear somebody describe 100 minutes as a long watch, you know?
When it comes to, like, a nasty slasher from the early 80s,
right,
you want 80 minutes, 85, maybe 87 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't want 97, 99
You want
minutes.
Something like Steve Miner would give us, you know, right?
This film should be like 93 minutes, but it's like 97 and change because it's uncut. So you're getting exactly what you paid for. For the longest time, you couldn't find this movie uncut. It was almost impossible. And then in the 2000s, like 2002 to 6 or something like that, they went, you know what, just fucking do it. Give us a whole, you know, and they brought the DVD out saying, here's, so it took that long for them to say, here's the uncut
version. Was it the director that went to jail, or was it the editor?
No, it was a UK distributor.
UK distributor?
Yeah.
Okay.
The following preview trailer is not suitable for viewing by persons of a nervous disposition. Switch off your television set immediately, unless you are prepared to be really terrified.
Nightmares in a Damaged Brain.
Prepare yourself
for the most intensely shocking motion picture of our time. The motion picture everyone is talking about.
Hello?
A dream you can't escape. Alive.
Nightmares in a damaged brain.
Can you think of another horror film from the time that had such a gory hook at the very beginning of the film? Because, like, the very first part of the film is Buddy rolling around in sweaty bed and then waking up and seeing this gore with this headless corpse.
And then the eyes open.
And then the eyes open as he's screaming. And it's like, ah, here you go, nightmare. Here's the move. This is what you're in for kind of deal. It's right. Like, holy fuck. I love that.
It's certainly a good hook, and one that shows you his mental state, which makes his performance later on all the more believable.
Yeah. This film was released unrated, and in 1981, theater, like, small parlor theater places, like New York, Los Angeles, they ate this shit up. They wanted this, they wanted the gore, they wanted the slashers.
Like Grindhouse shit.
Yes. Yeah. Like, the early 80s, it was the time for this. It was a perfect time to make this film.
And for some films, a low-budget, grainy feel works.
Yeah. And this has that.
Yeah.
It's definitely, like, the transfer is horrible because the master is horrible.
Yeah, like, cheapest color film that can probably get their hands
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it gives you that kind of snuff quality, like an old Evil Dead VHS used to. Yeah, this movie didn't care about ratings. It didn't give a fuck. It wanted to give you nastiness, and it delivered. And that's what I like about this film.
Right.
And you couldn't do it. Like, after a couple of years, this was you were not making these kind of films because nobody would see them.
The censorship craze in the 80s, yeah.
This film created a big furor.
Right.
Big.
Not
huge.
Der Fuhrer.
I have not Der Fuhrer, just Fuhrer.
Case history synopsis. Tatum transferred from Braston State Hospital for the criminally insane. Medical profile, intermittent epileptic seizures. Psychological profile, paranoid schizophrenia with delusions of grandeur and obsessive compulsive dream ideation. The dream ideation apparently triggered violent psychotic attacks. Suffering from severe amnesia. Prognosis. Tatum is our first major success. We have taken a dangerous psychotic and completely rebuilt him. Programming him for future government or private sector use will be our next step. My congratulations to one and all involved.
I like the premise of the film. I like the idea that somewhere there is a group of psychiatrists that work for the government that are cherry-picking disturbed individuals so they can try and tailor their psychotic tendencies.
Well,
that's an interesting concept to me. I'd like to see that kind of, you know, grafted into a different movie.
I smell prequel.
They even went further to say that this was a trial basis that they were doing for the military, right? The military and
secret
defense.
Experimental drug trials.
Experimental drugs to see if they could counter psychotics. You know, like, this guy was deeply disturbed, and they figured that they had cured him with this drug.
Rebuilt him.
Well, and then let him loose, much to their chagrin.
That if they could somehow reconstruct their psychoses, they could target them some way, right? Point them at an enemy.
MKUltra.
I must kill the moon.
Oh. So allegedly reformed murderer George Tatum is released and does the first thing any medicated ex-sexual psychopath should do. He takes a stroll down New York's infamous 42nd Street, which at the time was notorious for peep shows, prostitution, adult films, you name it. He checks out some shows and watches a woman masturbate through a plate glass window, and guess what happens? Can we say fucking relapse?
Oh, George, I know you could be like this. Oh, why aren't you in here with me? Oh, George!
Like, you saw half her box.
Yeah.
You saw half of her box in that film. You know, it's like, wow, if the aspect ratio was a little bit less, you saw a little bit on top and bottom of the screen, you'd be seeing penetration on that.
Right.
Yeah.
The halfway house doesn't know where he is. The outpatient desk hasn't seen him. And you're his doctor. And you don't know where the fuck he is, huh?
Potential psycho killer misses an appointment. No one bats an eye. They wait for 3 missed appointments before they bother to investigate.
2 weeks later, he's like, where is this homicidal fucker?
Look, for what it's worth, I'm sorry.
Sorry? You lose a dangerously psychotic patient from a secret experimental drug program, and all you can say is, I'm sorry?
You better find this guy.
Sorry, you're sorry.
Oh, I know.
You lost a client, you're sorry.
It's like, when did he become a woman?
Now, if you value your job, you will get him back in this hospital before things get out of hand.
Yeah. And his little pocket Napoleon thing, you know, with the...
on the coat.
Waiting for him to suddenly scream out, Josephine!
Meanwhile, in Florida, Susan Temper is having an awful time raising her three kids, especially her brat, practical joking 9-year-old boy, CJ.
I've had it. I've had it with these tricks. Just love to scare all of us, don't you? We could have had an accident out there driving so fast, but you don't care about that, do you? You don't care about your own mother! Get upstairs to bed! I mean, get upstairs! I don't even see you! Get upstairs!
The kid's a brat, but he's a brat. He's 9. Who cares? He's 9, you know? I don't think he was doing anything none of you boys probably would have done at 9 years old. You know, I'm not saying, I don't think any of you were angels.
I don't remember trying to fake that I was dying with ketchup all over me and stuff like that.
Maybe not to that extreme, that one in example, but for the most part, you know.
But who sees a loved one, you know, gushing blood from the abdomen and doesn't call 911? Waits like 20 minutes.
Well, that's bad parenting. Like they obviously didn't teach
their
children.
These are latchkey kids too. Wow. You know.
Well, for what? She doesn't work.
I don't know what
she's doing. Like, I don't know what her job is.
She's a full-time adult.
She's not written very well.
I don't know. And I don't really care about her. There's nothing about her that really is redeeming. She wakes up, she's in bed, kids are getting ready for school, and she doesn't give a fuck about them. Like, they're off.
You're gonna miss the bus.
She leaves after they're gone and goes and screws Bandana Bob. Like,
what does he do for a living? He lives on a sailboat.
He's probably filthy rich.
He doesn't look filthy. Wow. He just looks filthy.
For some reason, George is destined for this family in Florida. We don't know why yet. And the guy's leaving a trail of bodies as he moves south.
You know, I do like how the conflict, him struggling against his own nature. Now, how much of that is the damage they did to him trying to tailor his psychosis, and how much of that is... You know, like I say, it's kind of hard to say. I think they took somebody who was damaged and made him worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like that conflict. You know, the whole Jekyll Hyde.
It was written well, that kind of stuff. It was written well for him, and he pulled it off a lot, because when he killed the girl that went home from the bar, slit her throat and then ran her through a few times, and it was almost like he was getting sexual gratification out of it, and then he was instant regret, like, oh fuck, I've done it again.
Yeah.
And then when he brings her to the beach, he flips out like, fuck.
Interesting for us to see the disorder from the killer's point of view, so we can kind of get an understanding of how their mind works a bit, where it's coming from.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being like every other slasher movie, where the fear is driven by the fact we don't know shit about the killer or what their motives are.
Right.
Because we get, like, Michael Myers, we have no idea why he snaps or why he goes crazy or why he kills anybody. We don't want to know, because it's part of the mystery and the allure. Right?
Until Rob Zombie got a hold of it. And well, then,
less said about
that. Preach on, sister. Preach on, sister.
Luckily, I got warned off that turd.
Yeah.
Say cheese. Asking me to take a Polaroid is sort of like asking Picasso to paint your car. There's nobody in the house, is there? Take a look at that.
Man figure. What's going on?
Nobody there now. Let's go take a look.
I think my favorite scene, there was that moment when they were trying to shoot the house for the realtor, and they, in the photograph, they saw somebody in the window, and they rush into the house to see who's up there. There is a shot there that I thought was really good and impressed me. They run up the stairs, and there's a kind of a medium shot there with a camera kind of stationary, and you see them run down through the hallway, and then all of a sudden the camera shimmies left and right a bit, and you realize that it's not just a typical camera shot, it's a subjective camera shot, and we're actually looking through the eyes of the killer, which you don't realize right away. So I thought that was kind of neat, because it looked like just a typical establishing shot of them running through the hallway.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the camera moves. And I thought that was kind of neat. There for a second it looked like a typical shot, and then it became subjective. And they were like, oh no, he's there, we're here. You know, like, we're standing with the killer. I thought that was kind of neat. I didn't see that before.
Tony! I know you're in there because I saw you go in.
And I had forgotten that he kills a kid in this film. I didn't know that. And
he kills a couple.
Kids? There was the jogger who was a teenager.
I see your bike out front. Yeah, yeah, but I was looking.
And then his 10-year-old
best friend
goes in there, and I had forgotten that he had done away with the kid too. So he's up there with like Fred Krueger now. Yeah. You know, he's this guy is twisted.
Well, normally in these kind of movies, it's like a close call, or the kid gets away. Like there's, you know, it's usually the near miss, and it's like, oh, we're not missing this one.
Yeah.
During the film, you get little glimpses of the childhood event that triggered George's psychosis. The end of the film gives you this scene in its gore-filled entirety, but we'll get to that in a bit. Right now, Tatum's doctors are racing to find their patient, slowly putting the George puzzle together and figuring out why he's targeting this family in Florida.
There is no connection.
Paul, there is a solid connection. This man is in Florida.
Look, let me make it real simple for you, Paul. George's recurring dream? Well, it's all in the police records from 25 years ago.
That's right,
Paul. It really happened here. His father, the woman he was with, they were both killed. It even talks about an ex. It is the same person. It is George Tatum.
Oh my God.
It, more of his history was, it was like, again, there was the doctors in the back of the car, or in the car, getting more information on the patient. That didn't come until 1981. That was like Halloween 2, which was the same year.
Right.
The doctor's like, oh, I know everything about this patient. No, he, like, the dreams that he was telling you about actually happened. It's record. It's 25 years ago. Here it is. Oh, by the way, there's a family here that's got the same last name as this guy. Coincidence? No, he's here.
CJ, what are you doing out of bed? Getting sick and tired of your silly games. Did you knock it off? That's it. I'm calling your mother.
There's some dread in this film. I think the dread that they dredge up for this film was a little bit ahead of the film itself. There's definitely some style in here.
Like Babadook, the kid was annoying me, like, but not to the extreme that I wanted anything major about it. He's a bratty kid, whatever. Then I started feeling bad for the kid, you know what I mean?
He's going up the stairs and then the phone rings. Turns around and answers the phone just long enough to let the mom know that something ain't right. Hangs the phone up and then he's back up the stairs. Yeah, I love that sequence. I do. That stairway with the mask on and the hammer, and it's just the way they frame that, that's kind of nightmarish. And the string violin soundtrack.
Right.
That sequence I really like.
Did this come before or after Changeling? Changeling was 1980?
Just after.
Because there were quite a few homages in this. Changeling being one.
The ball.
Shining being another.
Yeah.
Psycho being another, when you see her step into the shower.
Well, to be entirely honest, there's only so many ways to hack through a door.
Still. My real problem is that I didn't like anybody. There was nobody for me to root for or care about this movie. I didn't care if any of the kids lived or died.
I disagree. I think the one thing I really like about this film is, you know, yeah, the kid's a brat, but he's not an idiot. This kid's is a smart kid. Right. He's got some behavioral problems. We know that. But watching this kid deal with this fucking problem at the end of the film, I thought was solid.
He was nine.
Shooting
don't
this
forget.
Guy. I don't give a fuck. He was
saying.
A 9-year-old that put eight bullets into this fucking guy that was trying to kill him.
I was actually thinking, it's like, wow, these Home Alone movies have gotten dark.
Yeah.
He reminded me of the kid from Phantasm 3.
Lethal.
Yeah.
You don't understand!
It seems like he's pulling the trigger. Oh no, out of bullets, what's he gonna do? And then he go gets a shotgun, and I just like that. It was a quick, you know, like, just like, you know, maybe 3-4 frame effect. Yeah. But you actually saw, like, the puncture wounds, like, when the shotgun hit him, and the way he went down the stairs. Like, it just, that yeah. was probably, I think, probably one of the better cut effects.
The drops after being shot were really good. Now, that was Cleve Hall.
That was Hall,
doing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because after getting shot, it isn't like he... First, he isn't thrown back like you see in a lot of cheesy action movies, right? But he's shot, and the way he just crumples to the ground, I liked. I liked the way he fell.
Yeah.
And actually, the two, he gets shotgun, he gets hit twice with a shotgun.
Yeah, you don't really see the second one. The first, you actually see the puncture wound, and the second one, like, you see the kid almost looks like he shoots him in the groin.
That's what I thought. I thought he hit him in the groin, too. And I thought, oh, or in the knee, or something. It was definitely low, right?
Yeah, I thought it was the knee. Yeah.
But sure, why not?
As poor fucked up George Tatum lies bleeding and dying, we get the full sequence of him as a child looking like little Lord Fauntleroy in his big ass bow tie, taking an axe to his father and mistress after walking in on them having an S&M session. And you really need the uncut version of this film to appreciate the relentless gore this scene offers you.
Care if the gore is cheesy. If it's excessive, fucking just right. give it to me. If it's from 1981, well, if this was made in 88, I'd be like, no. 81, fucking A.
You
give
like
me all
video,
that cheesy
You like
groan.
The Videodrome Cancer Drome, where like Chinese food is flying out of the guy, right?
That effect was better than anything in this film. But to sit there, like in slow-mo, having a decapitated head, and again, very Friday the 13th, decapitated head in slow-mo, yeah. with the hands reaching at the wound.
I like
only this one had blood flying all over the place where Mrs. Voorhees did not.
I like that it took two swings with the axe before the head came clean off.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously a kid doesn't have the same physical strength as an executioner with an old axe. So the first one just takes a chunk out of the neck, and then the second swing takes the head off. I thought that was really good. Because a lot of the times, especially in a cheap production, you get a swing of the axe, a cut, and then the head lying on the ground or flying through the air, and it's, you know, on the cheap. But that first hit going first, what is it, like a few inches into the neck?
Mm-hmm.
That makes it more expensive.
Yeah.
Like, they actually cared enough to give us the first hit and the blood effect for that, and then the decapitation.
But then they went for, like, cheap but effective, where they showed, like, we know that the head rolls off and on the
right.
floor, so they give you the shot of the camera on the floor showing you from the chin up.
Yeah.
So they could use the actress. You
exactly.
already have the picture of this decapitated.
Yeah.
But so now you're buying that's her.
It makes sense,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you see the prosthetic roll onto the floor. Okay, there's a head on the floor. Mm. Put the camera down there. Just show from the chin up, and you buy that's a decapitated head right in your face.
George, you don't understand.
No, George, son, no.
This was the film, 1981, notoriously, the director and the marketing team put Tom Savini's name all over this film. It's been a sore spot for Savini
right.
for decades.
You tried to get his autograph on a poster for this very film.
No, this is what happened, and Todd was with me. This was a long time ago. This was going back
no, it was
about
a
20
VHS
years ago.
Tape,
it was VHS. I found it, and I knew the scandal, and this was 20 years ago. This was pre-internet. I knew about the scandal. And there was somebody that had the VHS of it, and I hadn't seen it because for the longest time I couldn't find this movie in Canada. And so I bought it, Nightmare, and it said right on there, it's like, oh, Tom Savini, master of horror effects. So I bought it, and it was kind of a bait, and it, you know, just I wanted to see what his reaction was.
You were going to meet your hero, too.
It's like, and I did. Like, we talked to him, but I wanted to see his reaction, knowing that he wasn't involved in it, that he had said he was on record already a long time ago. He had nothing to do with this film. So I bought the VHS, brought it to his table, and I gave it to him. I'm like, would you sign this, please? And he almost he tossed it back at me, and he's like, I want nothing to do with that.
Wow.
I want nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that film. And he looked away, like he was disgusted. And I'm like, okay, that's the reaction I got. Fortunately, Todd was there to break the ice again, because he stuck Deranged in his face right after that, and he immediately popped, because Deranged was the first movie he did the effects for in 1971. He's like, oh my god, where did you find this? He was all happy again.
There's an 18-minute making of featurette for Nightmare that you can find on YouTube that gives some insight on how they put these effects together. Most of the effects were created by Cleve Hall, the Monster Man. This was basically his first job, and he gives some details on how Savini was exploited by the creators of this film.
Okay, what I know, what Tom told me is, I guess they, through channels, were trying to get him. The Lost Ticket recommended him or something, but Tom Savini recommended his Ed French, who had worked with him, and Ed went in to do it. And from what I can tell, I guess Tom dropped by and visited on the set and got his picture taken, and somehow got all the credit. And then that's actually what made the film more notorious, was the whole Tom Savini, I didn't do it, and then I became like, who did? And I was kind of like, me. And then when I came out to California, I was like, oh, you're the guy who did Nightmare. Yeah.
I can only imagine what people must have been trying to do to process that movie in 1981. But the gore effects, a little over the top there.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the blood gushed and the look of the blood, I had a problem with. It was way too kind of Kool-Aid red for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, the effects,
they gushed in a way that, yeah.
They weren't worthy of Savini.
No.
And I think that's part of the reason why he was like, no, that's not my work. Because even back in 1981, he was doing work that was much better than that.
Yeah, it was way... It was overdone to the point where you could tell it was fake. It was too much.
It was over the top.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And not to mention the color of the blood varied wildly, because the first kill, the girl that he steals the car from, that was like almost orange and opaque.
But the father's head wound at the end there, it looked like cherry Kool-Aid gushing from his head.
Cleve had nothing to do with the New York effect, which was the kid taking out the mom and the seductress with the axe. But that was the set that Savini was on.
Just to visit his friend, whom he'd recommended. Yeah.
So he was consulting. He was there for a couple of hours. He did some consultants about the effect, and they took that still of him on set, and then just threw his name on it. Oh, Tom Savini, special effects. And Savini was not happy at all. So if you get an old VHS, you'll see Tom Savini's name all over it. You get a new Blu-ray or a DVD, his name's no longer in there.
I didn't see it in the credits.
No, it wasn't.
It's gone.
We looked.
Yeah. It is gone now.
Enough's enough. Come on, both of you, up to bed. It's past 10 o'clock.
Welcome to my...
Let's score this. We'll start with Nude.
7.5.
You really?
Yep.
Real? Wow. Yeah. That's higher than I thought you'd give it.
No, I liked it. Like I said, some parts were kind of like slow, but for 1981, I thought it was good. The kid, like you said earlier, clever kid, annoying, yeah, but I don't think he was a bad kid. I think he was just a typical 9-year-old boy.
Stupid teacher sent me home. All of them think I killed Tony.
Brian Stewart.
You know, they say the soundtrack is 70% of the film.
Yes.
This one hurts.
It does.
It does, unfortunately. And it does distract from your enjoyment of the film.
It does.
You're straining to hear every word of dialogue. It's like recorded on an answering machine bad, which doesn't help. The ambient sound drowns out the talking. Some of the performances are laughable. Mm-hmm. When the producer has to pitch hit to play one of the main characters in the movie, that's a problem.
Guerrilla filmmaking, Brian, though.
It is, and I do like my guerrilla low-budget projects, and I can get behind them, but it's a real mixed bag for me, and for me, I think it's going to be a 6.
6 for you?
There's just enough that I push it over the acceptable mark.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of... I like some of the frame shots. I like the subjective camera. I love my subjective camera view, seeing through the eyes of the killer. That's good stuff. The blood effects were uneven, but some of them were really quite good. Mm-hmm. And like I say, Cleve Hall's favorite one was the pickaxe in the forearm, and that looked really good, especially because the hand was wriggling in pain. I thought that looked really neat. When he explained how it was done, I thought, oh, that's really clever.
And that's why I wanted to show you that.
Yeah, that's like old magician school, like sawing a woman in half good.
Yeah.
So I like the gorilla aspect. I like the low budget of the field. The fact that it was shot in 3 weeks, you get a sense of that. But I'd like the last 10-15 minutes of the movie and trying to tie it all back to the son sitting in the back of the squad car and the promise of something more. I almost wish they had gotten the money to make that movie now.
I want him back. Now, if you value your job, you will get him back in this hospital before things get out of hand.
Nick, what was your score?
5.5.
Fairly
close.
I feel like I need to take a shower.
Yes, and that's what a nasty will do.
Yeah, I was on the flunking line just like you, and I think I tripped over to the positive side at the end.
It's barely passable.
Yeah.
The sound thing drove me nuts. The woeful inconsistency in acting. Some of the camera shots were good. Considering the shoestring, some of the effects, you know, I was actually surprised. Especially finding out, if I hadn't seen that making up thing that you showed, I would have scored it lower.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would have got a 4.5.
Yeah, you got a little bit of insight on it how got it was a little, made.
Because this was a shoestring, I gave it a little extra credit. Like I said, it barely passes. I will not watch this again.
What do you know? You don't have to face this every day.
It's a gore relic, right? It was a film that they shot. They didn't care about ratings. They wanted to give you a nasty gore film in the spirit of Maniac and Friday the 13th and all that shit and Halloween. And they took elements of those films, put it together, but gave it its own story, its own character. Put a name and a face to the killer and a name and a face to the family.
And a much more fascinating story to a killer than you would expect for a B film.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'll give it a 7. I love the gore.
Yeah.
I love that Cleve Hall was involved. Like, this was his pilot feature as a special effects artist. I think that's great trivia. I really like that about this film. And I won't fault a film where it's their first production and they want to make a horror movie for borrowing things from movies that they obviously enjoyed and, you know, want to kind of emulate, but gave it its own story.
Right.
Like you said, like, it would have been easy to just had, like, first person, who's the killer until the end. Ooh, big surprise, it's whatever. But no, in this case, you know who the killer is right from the start. You know what's wrong with him, and he's on the loose. And you're following. You get the story through everybody's eyes. You get it from his eyes, the doctor's eyes, the kid's eyes, the mother's eyes. You get everybody's perspective in this film.
You're a bigger schmuck than I thought you were. Shit.
Folks, that's a wrap on episode 78, featuring Romano Scavolini's Nightmare from 1981, starring Baird Stafford and Sharon Smith. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, don't mention this film to Tom Savini. Fans will want to reach out instead to the monster man, Cleve Hall, if you want to talk about the effects for this nasty gore fest. I went into this fully expecting most of my crew to hate this film, and even after heavily criticizing it, Nightmare was given a passing grade. So with that in mind, I'll have to reach into the nasty bag again sometime in the future and put the crew to another test. And speaking of future, if I may get a little personal with you, the lovely Newt and I have just purchased another house, which closes in a couple months, so right after this show's release, we're hitting the ground running on getting our current place ready for sale. There's a lot of work which needs to be done, and time is of the essence, so the Horror 101 show will be taking a month off. We hope you understand. The next show will be out for you at the end of September. It will be the last show that we record from this dungeon. Bigger, better dungeons await. Not certain which title we'll be focusing on then. We'll be dropping hints on Facebook once the decision is made. For our supporting listeners at patreon.com/horror101, we will continue to post some cutting room floor clips during our hiatus. Be sure to come by there often and check for updates. And again, thank you for your continued assistance. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and my wife, the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
Everyone, you know, put your phones down, test the fucking microphone. You know what to do, Brian Stewart.
Hello, testing, 1, 2.
Nude.
Oh, look, I made the blue lines move.
Yes, Andrew's a jerk.
I'm going to call him Andy.
Oh, Andy! There's two types of people in this planet that can get away with calling me Andy.
Your family and anybody that knew you before grade 6.
Shut up, Newt! Okay, you've heard this fucking story before.
A lot of times.
I feel like I've known stories, Andy. Woman! Andrew forever.